First in our Bill of Rights is the freedom to hear uncensored ideas and opinions, to think your own thoughts, and to say what's on your mind. We couldn't have liberty without it. Now, more than ever, it's good to spout off, to listen, debate, and participate. Here's your host of Spouting Off, commentator, columnist, and all-around rabble-rouser, Karen Cataline.
Hey everyone, I'm a regular guest host on the nationally syndicated Alan Nathan Show on the Main Street Radio Network.
Now, the one who protects us all from prattling prognosticators and perfidious pundits.
I say, America, stay out the bushes.
Look for the union label.
To secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the government.
From my cold, dead hands.
I'm concerned that if we don't impeach this president, he will get reelected.
It's time for the Alan Nathan Show. Here he is, the longest-running nationally syndicated centrist host in the country, Alan Nathan.
Well, hello, everyone. I'm Karen Cataline, filling in for Alan today. Good to be back in Alan's chair. Always a pleasure to be a guest host. And Alan would like you to know his motto, if you don't already know. We want the Republicans out of our bedrooms, the Democrats out of our wallets, and both out of our First and Second Amendment rights. We're going to dive right in with our very first guest. Maureen Steele joins us, co-founder of the American Made Project, an organization that connects influential leaders and grassroots movements to drive real change. She's a seasoned paralegal writer and strategic advocate. You can find her on Substack at American Made Foundation. Maureen Steele, good to have you on the Alan Nathan Show.
Hi there. Thanks for having me. And it's the American Made Foundation, not the American Made Project. Just let me correct that so people go to the right site.
Thank you. American Made Foundation.
Yeah,
got it. Mm-hmm. And you at home, you can correct that from what I said, the American Made Foundation. There's a couple of things brewing. First off, let's talk a little bit about this absolutely show thing, gotcha thing going on with RFK last week. I was in the car driving and I was appalled. These people had no interest in having a give-and-take conversation. They would not let him answer any question. The Democrats wouldn't. What did you think of all of that?
Well, I thought it was incredibly rude, you know, in reverse, when you see those kinds of grillings, you know, the Republicans on the Democrats. It's not, you know, they let people speak. They let people answer. Most of the time, though, you see that they don't have answers. But this was so rude. It was so, they were openly hostile. And I thought it was so typical of, you know, their behavior.
And how transparent was it? I was applauding Bobby Kennedy Jr. for pointing out that everyone who had nothing but venom for him, he was trying the best he could, were taking huge amounts of money from Big Pharma. Remember when the left used to be against Big Pharma? Not anymore. So it was so transparent that their hatred was just off the scale. It seems like they were given marching orders to try and take Bobby Kennedy out. And that just makes him stronger, we hope, I think.
I hope so, too. But you're right. I mean, but I have to say, both sides are taking money from Big Pharma. So, you know, our government has become so corrupt in that, you know, we're the only country in the world that legalizes bribery. And we call it lobbying, but that's all it is. It's corporations paying you off to vote, you know, and to implement policy that's going to benefit them. So the Senate and Congress are not there serving the people, serving their constituents. They're not public servants. They are in power, which isn't what they should be. And they're taking bribes. They're getting rich off of, you know, off the backs of the American people and off of our health and depriving us of our rights.
Couldn't have said it better. And that's why you're the guest and you're saying it. I can't help but also think that it isn't just about money. I mean, money leads to power. But there seems to be an agenda to poison kids and to demonize and vilify anybody who says no. I mean, for the left, and you're right, Republicans are taking money too. But on this issue, when the left tries to completely subvert our justice system and go after parents for saying no to a useless vaccine. Tell us about this story, because it just is bone chilling, or it ought to be for anybody who loves freedom.
Yeah, it's an incredible story, and I wish I could tell everyone it's a one-off, but this happens every day in America. We have thousands of these cases. So parents brought a 9-month-old child in for a well child visit, and they refused a vitamin K shot that they refused at birth. They give that at birth, they say, so that your child doesn't bleed out. But again, blood clotting disorders are so remote. They're not very common, but they give vitamin K to everybody. And so that's what it was for. They refused it again. And the doctor threatened them that if you don't get this shot right now, I'm doing a 51A report to CPS. They left. The Dr. Gohafar, a Tehran, Iran-trained pediatrician, did report them. And instead of CPS, when they got the report, giving it a screen out because there's no there, they have a right as a parent to refuse vaccines, to certainly refuse a vitamin K shot. And they opened a case on them. They started harassing this family for weeks, bringing police with guns drawn to their home. They were terrified. They had 5 children. These children were all, you know, organic food. Both parents worked from home. They homeschooled their children. They ended up moving to Texas, where there was family and friends. The state of Massachusetts had never, they'd never been to court. The state had never taken custody of those kids or awarded custody to the state, because there's nothing wrong here, and they were never served any paperwork. They moved to Texas, like we all have freedom of movement, and the state of Massachusetts lied and told the state of Texas that this family kidnapped their own children and that they had custody, which was a bold-faced lie. So they were arrested at gunpoint, 20 cops surrounding their house with guns drawn, took the hysterical children away from their parents. The parents were jailed in Texas for 30 days at $2.5 million bail each. Murderers and rapists don't get bail like that.
Well, the left comes out in favor. The left protects and cheers on and tries to make heroes out of criminals, but they're making criminals out of parents. That's what seems to be going on.
Yeah, and so this family still isn't reunited, and that's what's so important for people to understand. It's been 7 months now, and we have a documentary out on it. People can watch it right now. You can go to AmericanMadeFoundation.org, and you can click on the link to the movie and watch it. It's important that parents and grandparents see this, because it was them, you know, 7 months ago, and it could be you tomorrow. It's really important that people protect their children. We also have a book coming out, CPS Pipeline, State-Sanctioned Kidnapping, and there's a bonus chapter in the back of that book, and it teaches parents how to protect their children.
And we're talking to Maureen Steele, co-founder of the American Made Foundation. What do you think is behind this going after people's children and parental rights? We don't have much time, but it seems like it isn't just, first of all, I don't understand why Texas, of all states, would have gone along with this. You maybe want to comment on that, but also the absolute virulence with which they're going after it, again, suggests a bigger agenda that is even, frankly, more sinister than what we're seeing on the face of it. Do you have any insight on that?
We do. It's money. This is an $80 billion a year industry, and Doge did a really good job at exposing that. This is RICO. But in 2019, Secretary of State Pompeo at the time, in his trafficking and missing persons report, notified the president that the foster care system in the United States is the number one purveyor of children into the sex slave industry. So of these things link. And so you have a judiciary. We have the receipts that judges are getting paid off to take children. Plus, there's money coming in from Title IV funding, which is from HHS, and Social Security. So this is a money-making machine taking your children, and it's from your tax dollars. So they're using our tax money to destroy our families, and they're getting paid, you know, millions of dollars to do it, along with the parasitic agencies around them that work with them, you know, anger management classes, you know, the county mental health centers. So none of these people are incentivized to say, no, Maureen Steele's a great mom. There's no there there. Give her kids back. They don't make any money for that. So they're triple dipping. They also get money. You have to pay for the class. They get money from the state, and they get money from the Fed. So this is a money-making machine.
Let's end on a positive note. Apparently, Florida is moving to protect parental rights. What exactly are they doing, and how can other states do it too?
I have not heard that, so I have no idea.
Oh.
I don't know.
I'm
so wrapped up right now in the release of our documentary and doing all that. I've had my head down for the last few days. So if they have something, I haven't heard of it yet.
Well, it was in my notes, and forgive me, but it says in part of these notes that Florida is moving to protect parental rights, and that appears to be at least part of the answer. Give us a very 30-second thumbnail on what it is your foundation does and how people can find you, follow you, and support your work. Less than 30 seconds,
so, AmericanMadeFoundation.org, and you can follow me, Maureen Steele, _ on X.
Okay. She knows this. She's done it before. Maureen Steele, thank you. Hope to have you back soon. We appreciate it.
Thank you. Thank you.
Yeah. Well, amazing story. Jaw-dropping, for sure. Well, we're off and running on the Alan Nathan Show. We're going to take a quick break. We'll have more on the Main Street Radio Network right after this. Don't go away.
This summer's heat waves brought higher UV indexes across the country, and that's cause for concern. Dr. Raza Bukhari, CEO of Medicus Pharma, explains.
90% of non-melanoma skin cancers are related to exposure to ultraviolet radiation from the sun.
Even with regular use of sunscreen, high UV rays can cause significant damage. That's why getting a professional skin check could save your life. And new treatments on the horizon are poised to revolutionize the way skin cancer is treated.
We are currently in phase 2 trials of a non-invasive skin cancer treatment called SkinJet. This small microneedle transdermal patch provides a relatively painless, cost-effective treatment for basal cell skin cancer. So far, in our interim analysis, more than 60% of patients achieved complete clinical clearance.
For more, visit medicuspharma.com.
Welcome back, everyone, to the Alan Nathan Show. I'm Karen Cataline, filling in for Alan today. What a pleasure it is to be back in Alan's big chair. And we have a wonderful lineup of guests for you. We're already off and running. Next up is President and Executive Director of the American Suppressor Association, otherwise known as ASA, Knox Williams. Thank you so much for joining us here on the Alan Nathan Show.
Karen, it's a pleasure. Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, so bring us up to speed, because not everybody knows all about suppressors and what you're dealing with right now, which is that the ASA is vowing to dismantle NFA for good. Tell everybody what the NFA is and how it affects your organization's suppressors.
Yeah, absolutely. So, and you're spot on. We are trying to do away with the NFA, or the National Firearms Act. So for anybody who's not familiar with that, that was a law that was passed all the way back in 1934. That regulates suppressors, short-barreled firearms like short-barreled rifles and shotguns, machine guns, and a few other things, and imposed a $200 tax on them. We were able to work with groups like the NRA to successfully get rid of that tax as part of President Trump's One Big Beautiful Bill. Unfortunately, we weren't able to remove these items completely from the National Firearms Act. So you will still have to go through a registration process. And we're trying to get rid of that. We don't think that you should have to register your guns with a federal entity in order to exercise any of your Second Amendment rights. We're fundamentally opposed to it. And for the past 14 years, our organization has been working towards trying to dismantle that regime.
Well, I can hear the left screaming and jumping up and down with their hair on fire. That's almost a pun. When you say that you want to get rid of the ability of this NFA to register or whatever it has to do with machine guns, the left thinks every gun is a machine gun. But I'm sure that you get tons of screaming leftists who say, "Oh, they want to legalize machine guns." What is your answer to them on that?
Yeah, well, I mean, look, like you look at the federal statute. Yes, machine guns are included in the National Firearms Act. No, I do not believe that they should be, but they are. There's also a statute from 1986 called the Hughes Amendment, part of a broader package, but that says that machine guns manufactured after May of 1986 are not available for commercial consumption or sale or possession. So you do have, you know, licensed manufacturers and law enforcement government entities that can possess machine guns. But when you're looking at the civilian pool of these things, A, they are already legal. You just have to go through the NFA process. But there's around 500,000 in circulation. So it's a very finite number. They're also, because of that restriction on them, you know, the supply is pretty limited and the demand is decently high. So those guns are really more of an investment than anything at this point. So, you know, they're always going to find fault with things. And, you know, you can trace the vilification of rifles and, you know, so-called quote-unquote assault rifles, which we all know is an intentional misnomer. That was coined by a guy named Josh Sugarman at the Violence Policy Center in the 80s or the 90s. So it's an intentional move. They did a great job at conflating the two and confusing the issue. And it was very, very effective propaganda on their part.
Yeah. Well, in an environment where the left has been incredibly successful in conflating the gun with the crime rather than the criminal with the crime, they've done a marvelous job at that, as well as a very socialist view that all humans are the same and there's not a difference. If anything, they're pro-criminal. They want criminals to have guns. They don't want legal law-abiding citizens to have guns. But I can hear the audiences, you know, how are they going to defend this when there are so many people who've been to the notion that Americans ought not to have guns or a right to defend themselves at all? And here you are defending the right to have a machine gun.
Well, what we're really focusing on primarily, at least initially, is removal of suppressors from the National Firearms Act, right? So it's a little bit kind of splitting hairs on that. We've got active litigation alongside the NRA, Second Amendment Foundation, and Firearms Policy Coalition challenging the validity of the registration scheme, the NFA's inclusion of suppressors and short-barrel firearms. So we're not, at least in this particular endeavor, going after the machine gun specifically.
Okay.
And
with your and let me ask you the same thing about suppressors. For those people who may not, again, understand or don't agree, what is your main argument about the suppressors other than the across-the-board generic restriction on firearms? Do you have one? Do you tell people, you know, there's no reason why law-abiding citizens shouldn't have suppressors?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that for people that don't use suppressors, if you're engaged in shooting sports, the general answer to that question is going to be, huh? You know, because they've lost a lot of their hearing. You know, suppressors are a fantastic tool to help mitigate preventable and irreversible hearing damage. You know, earplugs and earmuffs are great as well, but they have their limitations. And using a suppressor in conjunction with traditional hearing protection devices is by far the safest way to shoot and protect one of your five senses. I think that a lot of people are pretty cavalier about, you know, like, oh, it's just your hearing. Well, I don't personally think that anybody who exercises a constitutional right should ever have to weigh the loss of one of their five senses while exercising that constitutional right.
Believe it or not, we're talking to Knox Williams, president and executive director of the American Suppressor Association. Believe it or not, I've never heard that argument because, again, the left is so loud that they never met a restriction on guns that they didn't like. I mean, if the real agenda is to simply take guns away from law-abiding citizens altogether, then everything looks good to them. So that argument, I don't think, has made it through the noise. They'll tell you, because I know their arguments, and I don't all know all yours. I kind of do. and that is, oh, we can't have a suppressor because a criminal might be stealth enough to use a suppressor and nobody will hear that he's killing people. I mean, does that sound reasonable? I mean, what they say?
You hit the nail on the head with what they do say in terms of its reasonability. Absolutely not. It's rooted in myths and intentional misconceptions.
Right.
It becomes willful ignorance very quickly. And granted, most people have not been around suppressed gunfire. I totally understand that. But how can you come into a bait with what you assume is an informed position if you've never actually even heard it? These things don't silence guns. Guns are still very loud with suppressors. They're just less dangerously loud.
Right. Well, it gives me an opportunity to use the slogan that I heard recently, and we're going to have to wrap it up, that you can never reason a person out of a position they never reasoned into.
Ain't that
you
true?
Can use that. Is that great?
I like that a lot.
I love that. Tell everybody how they can find you, they can follow you, and they can learn more about what you're doing.
Yeah, check us out, AmericanSuppressorAssociation.com. We're on all the social media channels. And if you'd like to join our association, ASAmember.com.
Very good. Such a great interview. Good talking to you. Knox Williams. Take care.
Good.
Hope
Thank
to talk
so
to you again. All right. Well, we are off and running, as I said, and we're well underway. We're going to talk about, I hate talking about this, but I love talking about this, anti-MAGA Republicans, in other words, known as Never Trumpers. We'll talk about them when we get back. You're listening to The Alan Nathan Show on the Main Street Radio Network. Stay tuned.
Tilly Ramsey, daughter of celebrity chef Gordon Ramsay, is ready to step out of her father's shadow into her own culinary adventures with the new series Dish It Out, premiering Friday, September 5th on Prime Video. A passionate foodie and aspiring chef, Tilly celebrates online trends and family recipes, alongside some surprise visitors in the kitchen, including her parents Gordon and Tana Ramsay, Gillian Jacobs, Frankie Grande, and many more. In each episode, Tilly receives a mystery box from chefs, influencers, and home cooks from around the world and uses the ingredients to cook a dish for a studio guest. Tilly Ramsay.
I sat next to my father in the kitchen for my entire life and wanted to become a chef for as long as I can remember. Now that I've graduated culinary school, I'm ready to sharpen my skills and create exciting new dishes for my guests, and will be sure to have plenty of fun along the way.
Don't miss Dish It Out starting this Friday, September 5th, only on Prime Video.
Circle K is expanding its membership rewards program, Inner Circle, throughout the Lone Star State beginning on Wednesday, September 3rd. Free to join, customers can now become members to get fuel discounts, drink deals, and more. To celebrate, Circle K is hosting a Fuel Day pop-up on Thursday, September 4th. Customers can get 40 cents off per gallon of fuel from 4 p.m. to 7 p.m. local time. Inner Circle members will have early access starting at 7 a.m. Members can enter their phone number at the pump or inside a checkout to access the savings. First-time members can save 25 cents per gallon of fuel on their first five fill-ups and have access to discounted drinks. Members also get personalized offers and exclusive deals throughout the year. Sign up at CircleK.com/inner-circle or enter your mobile number at checkout to enroll via text. Learn more about the Fuel Day on Thursday, September 4th at CircleK.com/TX-Fuel-Day.
Welcome back, everyone, to The Alan Nathan Show. I'm Karen Cataline, filling in for Alan today. And I teased a little bit about the Never Trumpers. Our next guest, I think he's self-identifies, I hate using that term, as an anti-MAGA Republican. We'll hear his story right now. Senior advisor to Our Republican Legacy. He was the chairman of the Washington State Republican Party and the 2016 U.S. Senate candidate against Democrat Senator Patty Murray. Chris Vance joins us. I assume no relation to JD. Welcome, Chris Vance, to the program.
Great to be here. Fun fact, JD Vance is not actually a Vance. He adopted his
father-in-law's name. So, no, we are not related.
That's true because of his book, Hillbilly Elegy. Well, I can't wait to dive right in. I wish I had an hour to talk to you. So why are you against MAGA Republicans? Are you a Never Trumper? And could you give some real hardcore facts about what Trump is doing now that makes you still anti-Trump, if I'm not making too many assumptions?
No, I'm definitely one of the OG Never Trumpers. I've been involved in just about every group out there. But now I'm a senior advisor with Our Republican Legacy, and our focus is not so much on Trump, although obviously the changes he brought to the Republican Party are why we're all here. But we're focused on talking about what happens after Trump. We are focused on the reality that the 2028 election is just over the horizon. And what we're advocating is that the Republican Party return to the principles of Ronald Reagan, to support for NATO, free trade, lower deficits, those sorts of things. I mean, okay. I have problems with Donald Trump personally, obviously, but that's not the real issue. It's not about mean tweets. It's about he has deviated from basic core conservative policies.
Okay. Give me an example of what he's actually doing so we don't get bogged down in personalities and stuff like that. Talk about what he's doing that you are especially against.
Tariffs. Absolutely. Okay. I was a Republican for 37 years. I was an elected official here in Washington State, where our economy is based on free trade, our ability to sell our airplanes and wheat and apples overseas. The Republican Party was always adamantly pro-free trade, in favor of NAFTA, in favor of the Trans-Pacific Partnership, of lowering trade barriers. High tariffs, which is taxes on products that Americans want to buy, is economic poison. It's killing our economy right now.
Let me ask you, though, how is it free trade if it's not equal? It seems like we're applying socialist principles to trade by giving special sweetheart deals to countries while we pay more and they pay less. That doesn't sound like free trade to me. It seems like Trump is just trying to equalize the playing field so we're not getting taken advantage of. What's wrong with that?
That's just because it's not true. I mean, what he's done is dramatically raise tariffs. Our policy was always lowering tariffs across the board for all countries to make it easier to sell our products. And, you know, we can dicker about this.
Wait a minute, we're talking past each other. Is it fair for them to pay, for us to pay a higher tariff on their products than they pay on ours? Is that fundamentally fair and free if one side is paying a lot more than the other? Sounds like welfare to me.
Well, it's not, and that's not what the situation was before Trump. There was pretty much worldwide standards to keep tariffs to roughly 2%, and for the most part, they were. It was actually, you know, you talk about socialism, it was the left. It was people like Bernie Sanders who wanted high tariffs to protect American jobs. Conservatives always supported lower tariffs, and Trump has gone 180 degrees in the opposite direction, and it's killing our economy.
Well, I think people can see that our economy is not being killed. But pardon me for going a little further back. You say that you were against Trump at the very beginning, like 2015, 2016, when he was on the scene. I don't think tariffs was his primary agenda. So what really is it? If you or the Never Trumpers, I can never seem to understand why, after 10 years of knowing this man, it's taken a long time to get a handle on who he is, what he stands for, what he does, what he doesn't do, and so forth. I still have a hard time understanding a legitimate reason why they're so adamant, no matter what he does. What was it that made you so against him from the very beginning?
Well, you need to understand that I and many others, we were nerds. We were intellectual conservatives, you know, and we believed in a certain set of principles. Donald Trump is, to give him credit, Donald Trump has been very clear and very consistent his entire career who he is and what he believes in. He's a Pat Buchanan Republican. This isn't new. This idea of high tariffs, suspicion about our international involvements, basically isolationism, anti-immigration and nativist sort of approach.
Wait.
Pat Buchanan
Stop there.
Was advocating.
Immigration.
And this is where Trump has always been.
Are you for open borders?
Absolutely not. Of course not. No one's for open borders. But if you look back at the policy of the greatest conservative of all, Ronald Reagan, he was in favor of immigration and actually gave amnesty to those who had been here for a long time because realized you could not possibly deport millions of people.
Could Reagan have survived in this environment at all with 20 plus million illegal, unvetted, criminal and other illegal aliens coming into this country with not an ounce of vetting? There isn't a country that I know of in the world that does that, except our country under Democrats.
And this is important. I'm not here to defend Democrats. Joe Biden was wrong to open the borders the way he did. No one's in favor of that. But
he didn't do it.
I'm not part of the left. I'm a Republican.
I get
and
it.
Republicans, including Ronald Reagan, George W. Bush, everyone supported immigration reform because right now deporting tons of people who are just here to work is also one of the things that's really hurting our economy.
Does it bother you that they came here illegally, even if they're not have a criminal past, and that they jumped ahead of the line against in front of everybody else who wanted to come here illegally and want to be Americans?
Okay. Yes.
So
yes, absolutely.
Do you defend George W. Bush, George Herbert Walker Bush for the kind of policies they were? You as fond of Bush, for example, as the Bushes as you were of Reagan?
Oh, not quite, because I think that, but basically, yes, I was a member of the Republican National Committee when George W. Bush was president. I think he made some great mistakes, but he was a pro-free trade, pro-NATO, Reaganite Republican, and I believed in his policies. We want the party to return to those policies.
You know what makes me scared to death is returning to the policies of elitist rhino Republicans like the Bushes. Trump has done a miraculous job of exposing who these people really were. They were globalists who were really not for free markets at all. And it's amazing to me that the living former President Bush hates Donald Trump, he appears to, more than he hates communists in our government on the left. Out and out communists he won't speak out against, but he gets all upset about Donald Trump. He disagrees. That, to me, makes him not credible in any way.
Well, I don't think I agree with pretty much anything you said, but let me point out that if you look at our...
Go ahead, please.
No,
please.
But what I want to say is take a look at the leadership of our organization, our Republican legacy. It's not George Bush. It's Senator John Danforth and Governor Mark Roscoe, the former chairman of the Republican National Committee and former members of Congress. We have 22 chairmen, state chairs across the nation and are growing. We have thousands of people on our list. The Reaganite wing of the Republican Party is not gone. We are here, we are mobilizing, and we're getting ready for the fight in 2028 to take our party back.
Well, with all respect, and I welcome having you on again, I don't think that the former Republican Party pre-Donald Trump has anything to crow about. Reagan is, what, 50 years ago, 40 years ago now, 45 years ago, shall we say? Mm-hmm. And since then, the Republican Party has totally lost its way. It became incredibly corrupt and frighteningly so, taking the money and running an agenda that wasn't even what people had voted for. I think that the credibility and the opinion of politicians, both Republican and Democrat, have gone down the tubes because before Trump, Republicans were a horrific lot. I mean, you think John McCain or Mitt Romney adequately represented what conservatism is all about?
They weren't even. Absolutely.
Yeah. See, horrible. Horrible.
Right. We're just going to have to disagree, and there'll be a showdown in 28.
Okay. Well, I think you got a big job ahead of you. I look forward to it, and we'll have to talk again soon. I'll give you time to chat. Good to talk to you, Chris Vance, senior advisor of the Republican Legacy. We'll be right back on the Alan Nathan Show right after this.
have an active government relations program. They're very much involved in legislative work to not only improve the ADA, but to strengthen enforcement. The bottom line is a law with no enforcement is no law at all. But it's not just about legislative work. It's really just about public education. We want the general public, we want policymakers, we want business owners to understand that they have a role in knocking down barriers and making the world more accessible. We have an active campaign going on right now. Barriers still exist. If you go to our website, pva.org, you can find information about various types of barriers that are out there through our PSAs. We have a petition that we want to send to the United States Congress that calls for improved enforcement of the ADA. And ultimately, we just want to get everyone in the game. We want everyone to have a stake in knocking down the barriers that still exist, because we believe in accessibility for all. To learn more, you can go to pva.org/barriersstillexist.
We know summers are packed with activities, and Whataburger's got you covered with big flavor and big value. For a limited time this summer, you can order more for less with our bigger, better bundles. Just order your favorite Whatameal, and you can add on a bonus meal. You can add on a $4 kids Whatameal, a $5 double meat junior Whatameal, or $6 nine-piece Whata wings. Or if you're just feeding the kids, these bundles work for kids' meals too. Just order a kids' meal, and you can add on another one for just $4. Really is the perfect way to make sure everyone is fed and happy this summer. We've also got Whataburger's brand new Prickly Pear Raspberry Water Fresher. It's a bright, refreshing mix of zesty lemon, real raspberry, and a hint of prickly pear. If you haven't downloaded the app yet, download it now. We are full on into our summer of savings mode, and we've got really special things coming up for our 75th birthday on August 8th. For more information, you can visit whataburger.com.
Welcome back, everyone, to the Alan Nathan Show. I'm Karen Cataline, filling in for Alan today. And we have to close out this hour. Boy, it goes so fast. President of American Commitment and Committee to Unleash Prosperity, a contributor to Fox News Opinion, chairman of the Internet Freedom Coalition, and author of the book Democracy Denied. Phil Kirpin joins us right now on the Alan Nathan Show. Hi, Phil. Good to have you along.
Hey, Karen. My pleasure.
Yes, ours. First off, so it looks like you're heading up a campaign to stop the climate craziness. Am I right?
Well, we're trying to get as much support in. We're trying to get as much support in for what President Trump and Administrator Lee Zeldin are doing. This is big. This is something the president did not take on during his first term, but they are now going directly at kind of the linchpin of all of the EPA's greenhouse gas regulations, and that was an Obama administration finding called the greenhouse gas endangerment finding that said that greenhouse gases endanger human health and welfare and therefore should be regulated under the 1970 Clean Air Act. And if Trump and Zeldin are successful and this effort is upheld in court and so forth, in removing that, it becomes much, much more difficult for a future Democratic administration to bring back all of the crazy climate rules. Not to say they can't, but they'd have to go through a lot more steps, and it becomes a much more challenging thing than it was for Biden when he just brought back pretty much all of the Obama stuff. So they're trying to kind of salt the earth by knocking out the kind of the linchpin of EPA greenhouse gas regulation. And of course, the environmental groups are pouring comments into the docket, which is open right now, to try to slow them down and make it more difficult for them to do that. So we're encouraging as many people as possible to take a few minutes and write into the docket and support what the president and the EPA administrator are doing on this, so that they'll have a more balanced record that'll make it easier for them to complete this and to win in court. And so we've got that all set up on AmericanCommitment.org, if people want to weigh in. We've got pre-written comments there that you can send as is or edit them however you want, and we'll make sure that they get into the record.
In this age of bots that can send hundreds of thousands of comments, is there a way to stop that from the other side? Because I don't know if you heard,
question.
But
you know,
they
we've
cheat.
Seen some, yeah, we've seen some dockets. We've seen some dockets. You know, there was a few years ago, there was a huge controversy a few years ago when the net neutrality insanity was going on at the FCC, and
yes.
you remember they said we're all going to die
yes.
in the streets and all of this stupidity, there were literally millions of comments in the docket, and we later found out that most of them were generated by just a college student in a dorm room saying, you know, we need net neutrality a million times using, you know, software to make it look like millions of different people. And so this sort of thing has gone on. Supposedly the agencies are getting better at catching it. But yeah, we might be up against fake people, but all I can say is we need to get some real people in there just
we
so
need
it's not
real
a one-sided
people.
Thing.
Yeah. What I love about what you're doing is that you're going to the root of the problem, at least legislatively. And so give us even more detail if you can. So once people write in, is there anything else they can do? And what happens after this on this issue?
Well, everything the Trump administration does is litigated. So when they finalize this, you know, they review the public record, and I expect that they will, in fact, rescind the endangerment finding, then they'll get sued. And then it'll move through the courts, and probably you'll get some resistance judge who will say, you know, you can't do this, and then it'll move up through the appeals. And eventually it'll probably get to the Supreme Court. And, you know, I think we should get a victory at the Supreme Court, but you just never know with them. They could surprise you. But on this one, you know, this whole thing was kicked off. This whole thing started with a case called Massachusetts versus EPA, where a bunch of liberal states sued the Bush administration and said you need to regulate greenhouse gases. And it was a 5-4 decision with the liberal justices at that time saying that the agency had to decide whether or not to regulate based on the language of the statute. And then Bush sort of punted on it, and then Obama came in and did the stupidest thing possible, of course, and said, you know, we're going to use the Clean Air Act to basically enact a national climate law without Congress ever actually enacting it, and that's how we got into this whole mess. And but in that original 5-4 decision, one of the four dissenters was John Roberts. And so unless he's changed his mind, which, you know, with him, he's been known
possible.
To do that, but unless
it's
he changes
possible.
His mind.
That's a long time ago, and I don't know.
Sustained.
A few plane trips have happened since then. I don't know.
Yeah,
so,
well, yeah.
You know?
So he may have changed his mind, but I think they've got a pretty strong legal argument, because what they're basically trying to say is, look, all of this greenhouse gas regulation at the EPA, all of it runs afoul of recent Supreme Court decisions like Loper-Bright and Michigan versus EPA, and this whole idea of you can't have a major law sort of written into an old law. It needs to be something that Congress actually directs. And obviously we've never had Congress actually pass a law for economy-wide greenhouse gas regulation. All of it's been done under 1970s laws. So that should not
How
be allowed,
that?
I think, under the current court doctrine. So I think they'll succeed in court. I'm optimistic, but we're just trying to get as much, as much support behind them as possible to make it easier for them to move through this process of finalizing this.
I so appreciate the clarity with which you presented this, because you made the complicated simple for people, and you're already prepared for the kind of leftist ridiculous backlash and hysteria that we're used to. So you prepare people for doing that. I think that is especially great. Last question, I'll give you another chance to tell everybody how they can help. And that is, if and when, it sounds like when, it gets to the Supreme Court, will you be able to make the case on greenhouse gases itself and why this has been totally overblown, pardon the semi-pun?
Yeah, you know, I think they've got two different things going on in the proposals that the Trump administration is pushing forward. One are the legal arguments, and I think the legal arguments are very, very strong and should be enough to prevail on their own. But they've not made the mistake that many Republicans have made in the past of just not getting involved in the scientific debate. I think they recognize that that's
good.
A mistake. You can't cede that ground. And so they have one of the things, even though the EPA filing itself doesn't really get into the science, the Energy Department has put a very comprehensive document together reviewing all of the science. And by the way, they used the former top science advisor of the Obama administration as one of the authors. So that is
I'm
in the
I'm sorry
record.
To have to interrupt. Tell everybody how they can write you like you want them to. Write them like you want them
American
to.
AmericanCommitment.org. If you go to AmericanCommitment.org, you should see it right on the front.
Okay. And it really will make a difference, right?
Phil? It will certainly help. It will certainly help.
Excellent. Phil Kirpin, thank you for joining us. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be back with a whole nother hour of the Alan Nathan Show on the Main Street Radio Network. Stay tuned.
The opinions you hear on the Main Street Radio Network are those of the host, callers, and guests, and not necessarily those of the station, Main Street Radio Network, its management, or advertisers. The information on the Main Street Radio Network does not constitute a recommendation, offer, or solicitation to buy or sell any product or securities. So please, consult a professional before investing. If you have any questions or comments about Main Street Radio Network, contact us at 703-719-0433 or at our website, mainstreetradionetwork.com.